I'm Jason Michael Perry, the man with three first names, and this is Thoughts on Tech and Things. If you live in Maryland, or really anywhere in the US, there's a good chance that data centers have come up in your conversations lately. Last year, I dug into this topic with Jenny Abamu with WAMU, and we found ourselves talking quite a bit about companies like JM and BD, and how energy policy plays a role in the broader data center debate. To better understand this and the impact of data centers in the state, you really need to understand the whole system, how this whole energy system works, the entire grid, who makes electricity, who moves it, who sells it, and why Maryland by design depends on other states for nearly half of what it uses. Today, I'm getting a lesson in all of this, and well, so are you. My guest is Jason Stanek. He's the Executive Director of Government Services at PJM Interconnection. This is the government organization that coordinates electricity across 13 states and the District of Columbia. It's responsible for 65 million people and the power that they receive. Before that, he ran Maryland's utility regulator. And before that, he spent 16 years at the federal agency that oversees energy markets nationwide. He has seen this system from literally every angle. Jason is also joining me on May 12th at 9 a.m. at the Hopkins School of Business in the Baltimore Harbor East neighborhood for a live panel that I'm moderating on the future of energy in Maryland. This is part of the World Trade Center Institute's Agile Speaker Series, and if today's conversation leaves you wanting more or wanting the opportunity to directly ask me and Jason questions, come join us in person, and the link for that is in the show notes. So let's get into some headlines that frame the conversation, but first, a word from our sponsors.
Got a baby on the way? It's time for Hoopty. I'm Roxy Aldrew, Baltimore-based inventor of Hoopty Hoops, NFC-enabled silicone rings that turn any baby bottle into a smart device. Just tap to sync your bottles with our free app. Hoopty tracks your bottles, calculates expiration, and sends reminders so you never waste a drop. Shop gethoopty.com, that's G-E-T-H-O-O-P-D-E-E.com, and use the code THOUGHTS20 for 20% off.
Invested in AI but not seeing results? You're not alone. Prairie Labs helps organizations figure out what's working and what's next. Start with our AI assessment at prairielabs.io. You're going to hear the phrase net importer a lot in Maryland energy conversations. It means we produce about 60% of the electricity we use and we buy the rest. That other 40% is where our problem starts. Because PJM's capacity costs, what utilities pay to reserve future electricity supply, has jumped from $2.2 billion in 2023 to $16.1 billion by 2025 or in 2025. And much of that is fueled by the demand for power by data centers. Essentially, the value of that 40% is more expensive. This increase lands on BGE, and then BGE passes that on to you. One solution is for Maryland to produce more power, but to build out new power plants to fill that 40% gap is incredibly slow. Another proposed fix is a 70-mile transmission line called the Maryland Piedmont Reliability Project that will cut through Baltimore, Carroll, and Frederick counties. PJM says without it, the region could face blackouts as soon as the summer of 2027. The Public Service Commission has already said that they won't issue a decision until spring 2027, and the project is being fought hard by landowners and counties around that route. There's also a new idea gaining traction: make data centers bring their own power. This week, Energy Louisiana, think BG, but for Louisiana, announced a deal where Meta is covering the full cost of new infrastructure to serve its hyperscale data center, structured to deliver $2 billion in savings to the existing customers over 20 years. Meta funds the plants, ratepayers benefit. You know, that's possibly the model that Maryland could also push, but ultimately lawmakers are going to need to figure out some solution. Let's get into it with Jason. My guest today is someone who's seen the system from just about every angle. Jason Stanek is the Executive Director of Government Services at PJM Interconnection, the organization that coordinates the wholesale flow of electricity across parts of 13 states, as well as Washington, D.C., so let's call it 14 states. Before that, he served as chairman of the Maryland Public Service Commission, the agency responsible for regulating utilities like BGE and PEPCO.
Early in his career, he worked at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, also known as FERC by a lot of folks, and on the House Energy and Commerce Committee, working on national energy policy. With so much attention around electricity costs and how data centers and AI may be affecting demand as well as what we pay as utility users, I couldn't think of a better person to have this conversation with and really unpack just all the things that are happening. So, Jason, welcome to Thoughts on Tech and Things.
Well, I appreciate the invitation to present today, and I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Here's where I want to start. I've spent a few years consulting for energy companies around the United States. And what strikes me is that there are not a lot of people who really understand how complicated utilities and this energy system is. And so when we get into these conversations about why are my rates so high, I think one of the places that we could start is just understanding how electricity is delivered to your home and also the different jobs that are happening by different organizations. So I know, for example, that there are three core roles. There's the generators, the transmitters, the distributors. And I was wondering if you can give us just a nice little lesson here and explain what do these things mean and how do these different things work together?
The electricity system is pretty complex, and I've been in this business now for about 25 years. But you're right, it's broken up into three distinct segments, where your electricity is actually generated, where it is transmitted along high voltage transmission lines, and then ultimately your local utility delivers it through a distribution network to your home. So from the creation of that watt of electricity, and then it flows across perhaps many states in order to get to your local utility before it arrives in your home. So that entire network has to work in unison in order to make sure that electricity is transferred in real time, because for the most part, we don't have significant amounts of battery storage on the system. So when you need to turn on your light, there has to be a generator available at that moment in order to create and produce that electron.
So I've been thinking of a way to provide an analogy to explain the system. And the one that keeps popping in my head is using a grocery store, Giant, Safeway, Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, wherever you go. In that analogy, right, the distributor is the grocery store. They're the one that's doing the delivery. And that's BGE, right? BGE is responsible for essentially the retail outlet in doing that delivery. Then there's the transmission. That's the trucks that bring the food or whatever you're buying back and forth. And then there are the generators. And the generators are all of the suppliers that are creating that energy, right, and then send it. Does that seem like a good?
That is a very apt analogy, right? Because you have the generators or the farmers that produce the commodity, whether it be an apple or whether it be an electron. You have those who ship the product from point A to point B. And then you have your local grocery store that actually sells you that product, which in this case would be your local utility such as BGE.
And in this case, PJM is the supplier that is taking energy from a lot of different farmers, these 13 states, these 14 states we consider DC is one of those. And you're responsible for moving it, right?
You mentioned earlier sort of the retail aspect. So similar to the retail distributor, there's also a wholesale distributor. Think of it as your Costco for this same product here. PJM is responsible for moving the power across the network of high voltage transmission lines across those 14 states. And one of our major roles is to be effectively, if we could use another analogy, an air traffic controller, where we dispatch power from where it's generated to where it's going to be ultimately consumed. And we do that from an underground control room outside of Philadelphia, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in real time, to ensure that those electrons are effectively used moments after they're generated.
That's an important part. You said this earlier in the opening, that most of our grid is without batteries to store energy. So all of this energy is real time. It's use it or lose it. So if for some reason we're generating just a ton of power across all these 14, states, and we're using only a portion of that, everything else goes to waste. And so it's always beneficial to kind of share this. And I think this also gets into some of the marketplace dynamics that come into play here, right? So at peak periods, when we have energy consumption at the highest level, then that means that also it's going to be the most expensive and vice versa?
That's correct. Electricity is no different than any other type of commodity, whether it be gasoline prices or the price of a precious metal. So if demand is increasing and supply is not matching that level of increase, you'll see prices begin to get very, very high, possibly hundreds or thousands of dollars in terms of the unit that we price electricity, which is megawatts.
So that makes a lot of sense. And as I've had this conversation with a lot of people who are asking the very simple question, why are my rates so expensive? I'm starting to realize that we're kind of getting pinched from two different directions. And it's easy to blame BGE, and I'm not saying that BGE doesn't have blame here, but BGE's costs are not based off of purely the cost of energy. They're generally, where they make their money, is distributing the power to us, and then they're getting that supply from whatever source that they can get it. Is that a good way to describe it?
That's a accurate way to describe it. Recently, customers who open up their utility bill are shocked by the month-to-month increases that they're seeing. They don't know that BGE, while they have a rate on file, that rate may have not have changed for a year or longer. So what's causing the increase? First of all, it's usage. Of course, if it's going to be a colder winter, you're going to be using more electrons, your bill is going to go higher. The second component that you referenced is the distribution rate, which is regulated by the Public Service Commission in Maryland. Over recent years, the utilities have requested rate increases, which the PSC has reviewed and granted in part and denied in part. But overall, the distribution rates have been going up. And this helps provide resources for BGE to pay their linemen, to buy new trucks, to install wooden poles. And then the third component are the supply charges for the actual commodity itself. We've seen the wholesale price of electricity go up rather large increases over the past 2 years, both for the actual energy as well as a product that we call capacity, which is effectively an insurance payment to ensure that generators will be available in the future in order to maintain grid reliability.
So can we break these two pieces up? Distribution and the cost of distribution, power lines, we can almost think of this as BGE's footprint, city of Baltimore and outside of that, Baltimore County and all the areas. And same thing goes for Pepco, PECO, and all these different utilities. That footprint, it's the line that comes into your household that they're responsible for, right?
That's right.
And the work that has been approved over these last few years, I mean, I live in Baltimore. I've watched my streets get torn up as, you know, BGE has come in to replace lines. And then, of course, they come back and they fix up the streets. But that work is the work that's increasing the distribution costs. That's the thing that's been approved that BGE is charging us for separately from the other side, which is the surplus of the generation side.
That's right. We call that the supply side of the utility bill, which BGE has no contact with. They provide that as a service to others when they bill retail customers. So when you receive your bill, there are charges that BGE has control over and that charges that they are just including as a convenience on your utility bill. That oftentimes confuses a lot of people who open their bill to figure out, how do I decipher 15 different line items, mm-hmm. of which they may not know who is responsible for which of these items.
So then let's look at the supply side. This is where AI is really having an impact. This is the data center build out that's happening. But the thing that I think makes Maryland unique is that Maryland doesn't produce the majority, or maybe just slightly the majority of its energy, right? It's something around 58-60% of the energy that Marylanders use comes from energy power plants that are in Maryland. But when I look at that for our more immediate regional partners, Virginia, Delaware, Pennsylvania, these are states that generate a lot more of their energy. I think Virginia is nearly 100%, somewhere like 95 to 105%. You know, they sell their surplus. Delaware is like 75%. And then Pennsylvania is one of the biggest resellers of electricity within the grid. And then there's D.C., which sadly does not have a power plant. That's why they've seen the biggest rate increases. All of their power is essentially bought in on this network. And so what this means is that if the demand is low, then Maryland's doing all right. But when we see the acceleration of AI data centers, right, doesn't that mean that suddenly, well, now there's more peak usage of energy, which makes energy more expensive, which is the other side of this coin that's increasing.
So in addition to being the grid operator, we also have a charge of operating a number of markets that you just made reference to. As a regional market, we recognize that some of our states are going to be net energy importers and some will be net energy exporters. Pennsylvania is an energy powerhouse, Illinois, Indiana, West Virginia as well. And then you have states that rely on others for their electricity supplies. Maryland imports about 40% of its electricity from the out-of-state market on a given day. New Jersey, somewhere around that amount as well. And that's neither good or bad because states make a determination whether or not they want to use their resources to build items or to develop power plants. And for quite a number of years now, Maryland has made that decision that it is cheaper to import from other states than to build within the boundaries of the state. So these are issues that states are grappling with. I would argue that on balance, it would be better for the state to be in a net energy exporting position than having to rely on others. That said, part of PJM's charge is to ensure that Maryland's full requirements, 100% of its needs are satisfied 365 days, 24/7. But for the reasons you just noted, it is getting harder and harder to keep the grid in balance in real time because of the increased demand of electricity, largely the rise and development of new data centers.
As this demand increases, does PJM try to get its partner states to balance this equilibrium? I'm sure that there are cases where you're looking at one state and saying, can you produce more power to try and get the system to equalize? But of course, that there are a lot of organizations, state organizations and regulatory organizations that help make those decisions.
PJM doesn't have many tools in its toolbox. However, one important tool is when it runs markets, it has the ability to send a price signal. And that price signal could attract new generation. About a year ago, we ran one of these capacity auctions, and the price went up by a factor of almost 900%. That is a signal for generators to invest dollars in the PJM region to build new generation. For a long time, that price signal was very low. So effectively, that was a signal to retire your generation and go offline. We are currently working with all of our states. You may have heard that recently the 13 governors in PJM plus the Trump administration has shown interest in working with PJM to craft solutions to ensure that we address this fundamental economic mismatch so that we have demand and supply back in balance.
It's some of these things, I think, caught us all by surprise. The big one is Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania. I think the Trump administration is one of the ones who's been pushing or helping to provide the funding to bring this thing back on, which, again, Pennsylvania being a net exporter means that it's increasing the supply, which hopefully helps to long-term release, you know, reduce costs, I hope, or create an imbalance. And, of course, here in Maryland, the thing that Marylanders are hearing are coal power plants that were supposed to retire that are now not retiring because the imbalance is as big as it is. Is that?
That's correct. There is a scramble right now, particularly from data centers, to find supplies of electricity. So you heard of the reactivation of Three Mile Island, which is almost unheard of to restore a decommissioned nuclear facility. We're also asking some of our coal facilities, such as Brandon Shores in Anne Arundel County, to continue operating past its desired retirement date. And the reason PJM instructed that generator to stay online was because of reliability implications. If that unit went offline when it was scheduled to, there could have been potential outages in the city of Baltimore.
You mentioned the word outage, and I have to ask, I mean, with the imbalance in the system the way that it is, I have read and heard from different people that there is a possibility that if Maryland keeps on the current trajectory without other states or someone providing the supply that's needed, that there is the possibility of blackouts or outages maybe at peak periods during the summer. And that is going to continue to increase as a possibility as the grid is taxed. Is that fair to say?
At the end of the day, we work in physics and engineering. We don't want to be overly dramatic, but we are on record that Maryland needs energy infrastructure, both new generation and new transmission lines. Without that, we have some forecasts that predict that Maryland may see outages as early as the summer of 2027. So that's just next year. We have a number of proposals to build new transmission lines pending before the State Public Service Commission. But the state also needs to build new generation. It's retired a fair number of coal plants over the past 2 years, and we're not seeing the new fuel resources, so clean energy resources, including wind and solar. They're not joining the grid at the same scale and pace that we need them to. As you know, Maryland has had offshore wind aspirations, but they haven't materialized. And under the current administration, there are headwinds, no pun intended, for these projects to be developed.
We spoke about the Trump administration and its impact on nuclear in Pennsylvania, but then we have the inverse, which is that, just like you said, the renewable energy push that Maryland was making over the last few years is essentially stalled, if not stopped altogether, wind being one of those things, mainly because of federal funding across the entire U.S., upwards of what I think, you know, several projects. I think there was Sparrows Point project, there was a EPA solar project. All these projects are essentially in limbo. And so in some ways, it's not that Maryland didn't necessarily have a plan. It's just that that plan now doesn't work, which means that now there needs to be a plan B or plan C. And I mean, I don't know what that plan B or plan C is, but it has to happen quickly. I mean, you can't just put out a new coal plant. And of course, with the regulatory needs, I imagine this is a little bit of a pickle that the state finds itself in.
PJM is currently working with both Governor Moore and state policymakers in order to figure out how do we accommodate the large appetite for power from data centers in a way that protects existing customers, both residential, commercial, and industrial, from feeling the effects of one large customer that comes on, brings with it a lot of cost for the grid. You'll need to have new infrastructure to interconnect, as well as that power, right? We talked about the economics of supply and demand. All of a sudden, if you have a new neighbor that's sucking up all of the supply, you will feel the effects too. So we're currently working this year, hopefully by this fall, to create a new backstop auction, which will effectively procure the supplies needed for the data centers and will hold harmless other customers that are currently on the grid.
Interesting. That makes sense. Virginia is the data center capital of the world, and they continue to build data centers. And in some ways, this is a negative for Maryland in that it potentially takes that surplus energy that they would have otherwise sold that maybe they're using now for data centers. But also, it means that they're driving the market cost up, right? The cost of this thing is now in demand, and it's like, why sell it to Maryland? Because the inverse argument I'm hearing there is also with, like, backstop. This is Maryland saying, well, can you give us our same rate? Can you promise us the cost that it used to be?
The states are interested in assigning blame towards each other. Pennsylvania often looks to Maryland as an importing state and questions whether or not they should keep their resources in Pennsylvania for the benefit of economic development. Whereas in Maryland, we look towards Virginia and question why are we helping subsidize some of the costs of economic development in Virginia when they're building all these data centers and Maryland has very few of them on the drawing board. When we have visitors in the control room at PJM, one of the first things you noticed on the very large board of the transmission network is that there are no state boundaries. This is one interconnected machine governed by physics. We're not immune to the parochial concerns of each of our 14 jurisdictions in PJM, but at the same time, when you take a look at our transmission lines and you recognize that electrons flow on the path of least resistance, they don't know when they're crossing the Potomac River into the Commonwealth of Virginia. That's why it takes a regional approach as opposed to a state-by-state approach.
I appreciate that. And I also appreciate the visual, you know, this screen that shows everything. But at the same time, someone who's in Virginia most likely has a lower rate cost right now, or someone in Pennsylvania has a lower rate cost because of the way that they've met this balance, right, versus BGE. And at the same time as we're having this data center conversation, like you're saying, Maryland, in some ways, no matter what, if they build a data center here or if we support data centers being built here, we as residents of the state are still paying for that in some ways or some capacity. So I think it's important because so far you hear this common thing that data centers here in Maryland is going to drive up our costs. But I think that that's kind of separated from the actual thing, which is Maryland needs to have a better understanding of how it's producing its own energy to reduce its costs. And if it figures out a way, renewables or whatever, there's a way to kind of meet both of these things at the same time.
One way to immediately reduce the price of delivered electricity is to increase the supply of electrons. So building new generation in Maryland, putting that resource onto the grid as soon as possible, will have that downward pressure on those rates. Absent that, we recognize that the grid is an expensive piece of machinery. It needs to be maintained. And in fact, there are some pieces of the grid that are 70, 80 years old and are reaching the end of their useful service life. So we have a number of proposals across the state of Maryland to build new transmission lines. The problem that we then run into is opposition at the local level. Nobody wants a power plant in their backyard. Nobody wants a transmission line in their backyard. And we understand that. At the same time, without energy infrastructure, you'll have ability to throttle effective economic development and at the same time increase the chance that you'll have a service disruption or outage down the road.
One thing that I think gets lost here as well is that AI and data centers are a large part of this argument, but the need for electrons, the need for energy is growing just in general. I'm an EV user, EV driver, and one of the things that BGE offers for EV drivers is the ability to charge off-peak. You talked about peak times earlier, but the peak period is when, you know, the grid is at its max, when the electron usage is at its highest. But there are also periods like overnight where we're not using as many devices, electricity use is not, you know, as high. And at that point, if I charge my EV, it's cheaper. I also know that there are things that manufacturers can do, like data centers that run off-peak times, or of course, usage, you know, comes into that. But if they're doing training exercises or training AI, there are tactics that can happen to change this. I went all over with that question. I'm sorry.
You raise a good point, though. The grid is built to meet the conditions on a peak day. And those peak days may only be a few hours out of the entire year. So the rest of the year, there's a lot of capacity, unused capacity on the grid, where you could shift, let's say, one shift of a manufacturing plant to an off hour. Same thing if the data centers could run some of their trainings at an off-peak hour, the grid could accommodate that. So that is a school of thought that is currently being investigated, how much flexibility exists on the grid well beyond the retail level. So we're not talking about doing your wash at midnight. We'll need the data centers particularly to comply. Second to that, and second and third, is electrification of buildings and electrification of transportation. So as we see the wider deployment of EVs, to the extent that people understand how to program their car so it's actually charging at 2 a.m. as opposed to 5 p.m. when everybody plugs in, that will have a beneficial effect, not only for the grid, but for all users of the grid in terms of how much they'll have to pay.
And for home users who are experiencing the rate increases, one of the things that it's still expensive, but one of the things that you can do is you can install batteries in your house. And batteries in your house means that it can charge overnight and then use those batteries at peak periods. And so if you can negotiate these types of rates with your utility, similar to the way that this works with the EV, you can actually reduce your costs in some ways. And I know businesses do this.
That's possible right now. And it's mostly commercial and industrial customers that have the wherewithal to take advantage of this. But with economies of scale and with greater deployment of battery storage devices, I think you'll see some of these batteries enter people's homes. Obviously, we have the Tesla Powerwall that's available right now. It's only a matter of time. And having that flexibility, not only on your home, but lending that flexibility to the grid at large, will provide benefits to both you and to your neighbors.
So I'm curious also your thoughts on renewable and renewable energy with households. I think it's California, it's been maybe several years now, that mandated that new homes are required to have solar panels. And this is part of, you know, their way of looking at how do you figure out this mix? Because we've talked a lot about the business side of this, what BGE could do, what PJM could do, what the state can do. But there is that component, just like batteries that you can put in your household or batteries that businesses can use to reduce their costs, all companies using solar power and renewables, right? There's a mixture here that's important.
None of the states that PJM has the privilege to serve has gone that far as mandating new construction to have solar panels. But each of our states do run different types of programs, whether it be Maryland's Empower program, which promotes energy efficiency, to other programs that pay the customer an amount for reducing their usage during a peak day, whether it be hot or a cold day. These tools are available. Renewables are getting cheaper in terms of the technology. We do import a lot of the components from overseas, so it's being offset by tariff increases currently. But whatever we could do to either reduce demand or increase supply are solutions that we're willing to look at.
So I have a closing question, but I know I've asked a lot of things. I'm curious if there's anything that you wish I would have asked or would like me to dig into.
Right now, we have seen increases in demand for electricity that rivals the Industrial Revolution. 2 or 3 years ago, we were not talking about load increases on the system like we are today. Residential demand for electricity has remained relatively flat. So we can safely attribute the large majority of these increases to data centers. So we're engaging with that community, but of course we're engaging with elected officials, generators, utilities, and other power grid operators in the United States to figure out how do we best contain these costs, because the key word of 2026 is affordability. Affordability on so many levels. But utility bills, I can tell you, in the state of Maryland is a top three issue right now for Annapolis. And we have everybody's attention. We just need to work on solutions, and we need to work on them relatively quickly, recognizing that you can't build a new nuclear generating station in under 10 years. There are other means available to the state in order to blunt or delay some of the impacts of these utility prices. And PJM is willing to be a cooperating partner to those ends.
How bad do you think rates could get if some action doesn't happen and if something doesn't change?
I don't think there is an appetite right now by many of the state utility regulators to continue increasing distribution rates. That said, they don't control the price of the commodity itself. So is there the potential for increased commodity rates? Yes, but one action that PJM recently took was petitioning the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to effectively cap the prices for the capacity component of electricity for the next 2 years. That will provide a little breathing room and a little time for customers to have confidence that at least that component of their supply line will not be increasing over the course of the next 2 years. That buys us some time, but we still need to work on the fundamental challenges that are causing this aggravation of the supply-demand imbalance.
Going back to your statement, I think that it's important to understand that when we look at the impacts of climate control, when we look at the impacts of climate change, when we look at EVs, when we look at the increasing digital footprint, as you just said, that by itself, it's nowhere close to the load that this is adding to the system. This is, without any questions, there are no questions that it's data centers. But also, when we look at OpenAI with a $1 trillion goal in terms of infrastructure build out for data centers and data center need to power AI, this is a thing that doesn't appear to stop or seem like it's going to stop. And I think that why this conversation about PJM is so important is that even if Maryland says no, it doesn't change the fact that other states may decide to say yes. And those states that say yes, we as a state right now are dependent on some of those very states to increase their supply if we don't increase our supply. And that's a 10-year project in some cases, which creates this urgency. This was a bet that if data centers never came into play was a fine bet to make. But in the place where demand means that there's a better value for Virginia and a better value for Pennsylvania, if they decide to invest that way, it really changes the dynamics for the state.
If Maryland does not want the data centers, there are plenty of other states, including Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Indiana, who are welcoming of this development. And there's no question that we're in the midst of an AI arms race. If you take a look at how much generation that we built in PJM last year, and I should note that PJM is the largest power grid in North America, it was about 5 gigawatts. If you take a look at how much China built last year, it was over 540 gigawatts.
Wow.
So 5 versus 540. And that puts into magnitude the severity of this arms race and the need to build data centers, whether it be for national security or for all the AI needs that our economy, that our citizens are accustomed to using more and more. This isn't free. When you run a ChatGPT search, you may not be paying for it in the moment, but you will be paying for that down the road.
So, Jason, you're joining a panel that I'm moderating with the World Trade Center Institute. It's the Agile Speaker Series, and we're going to talk about the future mix of energy. And I imagine we're going to get into a lot of the things that we talked about today, but also with the thought of what can we do now and what happens over the next few years, because this is a thing that we have to do something about now. So I've heard some predictions that are very stark that, you know, data center demand, stalled renewables, and also the limited in-state generation means that the costs are going to keep rising, that we may have rolling blackouts 2027. And what I'm wondering is, what should a resident or Marylander do right now? What can they do? And maybe that's something at their house. Maybe it's something with BG. Maybe it's writing letters to their state representative. You know, what are the things or the tools that you think we can use right now to have an impact on this issue?
I think all those tools that you just mentioned could result in a material savings for this utility customer. There are programs that the state offers. The Empower program is a program that many customers don't quite understand or take advantage of. So I would encourage them to do that. Some projects around the house: energy efficiency, sealing doors, reducing your thermostat in the winter could meaningful make an adjustment to your rates. And engagement, like you said, letting your legislators know that this is an important bread and butter issue for your family. Challenge them to work on solutions, not only at the state level, but with neighboring states on a regional level. The state PSC is a small but mighty agency that most people don't understand what they do and how they have the ability to impact rates. There's also a public-facing component there that most people don't have the time or understanding, but I would encourage them, if they look at the PSC website, they will figure out ways to contact the commissioners, provide public input, and hopefully affect real changes at a time when many, many customers are struggling to pay their utility bill.
Jason is the Executive Director of Government Services at PJM. Thank you so much for being on Thoughts on Tech and Things.
Thank you for having me.
One more thing before I go. We spent this whole episode talking about infrastructure and energy, so it just felt fitting that this week Anthropic, the company behind the AI assistant Claude, would accidentally leave their own data exposed. A security researcher discovered that Anthropic had shipped a debugging file inside their Claude Code platform, which is a developer tool. That file contained the entire source code for Claude Code, 512,000 lines of code sitting publicly accessible on their own servers. It was downloaded, as you can imagine, and shared within hours, and Anthropic called it a packaging error caused by human error. No customer data was exposed, of course. The company with one of the smartest AIs is exposed by human error. Isn't that irony? All right, folks, that's Thoughts on Tech and Things for the week. Let me know your thoughts by leaving me a message in the WYPR app, calling 410-735-1616, or find me at jasonmperry.com. Thanks to the team at WYPR, our producers Sam Burmes-Dawes and Shania Mapson, and Perry Labs Head of Operations and Marketing, Myrna Martinez. New episodes drop every other week. I'm Jason Michael Perry. This is Thoughts on Tech and Things, and I'll see you next time.